Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Hello, everyone. This is Chuck Bonner and Julie Hayden, the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show, True Straight Up.
Brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture, and Chinese Medicine. We have a packed show.
Packed.
In a second or two, we're going to get to Robert Spencer to talk about his great column on Front Page Magazine. And then you may have seen over the weekend, Britta Horn, so-called unity chair, sent out a completely non-unifying attack on the former chair, Dave Williams, false and defamatory information. We're going to have former treasurer, it's like a party, Tom Bjorklund.
Monday party.
Anna Ferguson and Hope Shuppelman will join us on that. But first,
before we get started with Robert, I wanted to pay a tribute. I know Robert knows David Horowitz well. He just died recently, last week, at age 86. Extraordinary person. I first met him at Brown Palace 26, 27 years ago, when he was really at his tops. He was productive his whole life. But toward the end, we had him on the program, and he was as brilliant as always, but his voice had sort of gone and some other things. But he was the one that really exposed what the left, who it was. Back then, everybody would say, well, the left is, you know, they have good intentions. They're just a little naive. And they said, no, they're not. And he was a red diaper baby and a leftist at Ramparts before he converted over. He said, for every progressive, it's a totalitarian crying to get out. And it's really true. And he really did expose them for what they were. So just want to hail him and a productive and great life.
Well, and speaking of that, his organization with Front Page Magazine, Robert Spencer's latest column up on that regarding the death of the Pope, the Barack Obama of the Catholic Church has died. Robert Spencer with a new book out, Anti-Semitism, History and Myth. Welcome once again to the show, Robert. Appreciate your time as always.
Thanks, friends. Always good to see you.
So talk us a little bit about, you know, and Chuck studies this too, about the only thing, even though I was born and raised Catholic, I know about conclaves is what I saw in the movie, Conclave. And it seemed, I mean, theoretically, these are all men, cardinals, who God is speaking to them and helping them select the next pope. Or is it sort of like, you know,
any other
Republican primaries, you know, I mean, or what's, you know what I mean, where it's really just all politics and polling. Help us understand what's going on here.
Well, just like the church itself, it's a mixture of both. Okay. It takes place, of course, in an atmosphere of prayer and piety, but it is an election, and the election is based on the person who makes the best impression on the rest of the cardinals. And so you had very charismatic people. I mean, for whatever, all the faults of Francis, he was a big personality. And so was John Paul II. Benedict XVI really got in because he was John Paul II's right-hand man, and there really wasn't anybody else of that kind of stature. And so the last three popes have been these towering personalities, in a sense. And I think that's the kind of person you can expect that is going to stand out when you've got this room full of people and every one of them, well, what do? I'm a Catholic bishop.
Big whoop. Yeah,
they have to be the kind of people who are going to make an impression on their peers. And that's why they win.
What?
Well, they've also been at it. I mean, these days they do not nominate young popes because they don't want to be stuck with one for 30 years.
Like Supreme Court justices.
Yeah, and so even though John
Paul II was 58, and yeah, he was indeed 27 years.
Yeah.
And so Pope Francis, by contrast, he was 88 when he died, and he was pope for 13 years, which means he was 75 when he was picked.
Right.
And probably people were thinking, well, you know, he might only be there a year or two, and that would be okay, and then we'll pick somebody else. And he ends up being there 13.
But it also means that they've been at it for The minute he got elected, you said he made it last year. These ones have been talking about it for a long time. Now it's harder because they're chosen from all much more around the world than all being in Rome, and so they can contact each other easily. But they've been thinking about this, strategizing about this. There's a right and a left in there, and Francis
Oh, yeah.
was on the left, and so this isn't, they're coming to this already having thought about it a great deal and certainly discussed among certain groups with each other.
Well, that's the thing, Chuck. Francis was a widely disruptive figure because he was a leftist. A lot of people think that he was intentionally trying to undermine Catholic tradition, particularly when it came to the left's cherished issues and hot button issues in the culture today in the Western world. And so a lot of people are hoping on one side that there will be somebody more traditional coming in who will clean things up and calm things down a little bit. But on the other hand, Francis himself over the last 12 years picked like two-thirds of the cardinals
Yeah,
that are there.
110,
So
110,
it's
130
unlikely
years.
that we're going to get anybody but another leftist.
So it is kind of like the Supreme Court to a certain extent then, huh?
Yeah.
He sort of, well, talk, why did you call him the Barack Obama of the Catholic Church?
Well, I think Barack Obama was a Pope. Well, Pamela Geller and I actually wrote a book way back in 2010, The Post-American Presidency, about Obama. And it was the idea that he was not really an America first guy. He was not putting the well-being of Americans above all things. He was a socialist internationalist who wanted to weaken America vis-a-vis the world. As a matter of fact, there's a famous picture of Obama holding during the 2008 campaign the book, The Post-American World, by Fareed Zakaria. That's where we got our title, The Post-American President. And the post-American world argues that the big problem in the world is that there's a superpower, and America has to be weakened militarily, politically, and economically so that there will be parity and equality and justice in the world, and we're all on the same level, dirt poor and miserable. And
Right.
so Obama administration seems to me worked toward that goal all through for 8 years. And the Pope worked in the same way to undermine the Catholic Church from within for the 12 years of his papacy.
How do you mean? How do you mean?
Well, the Pope, as I said, was a big leftist. And so he said all kinds of things that he was actually so much indifferent to or even opposed to traditional Catholic doctrines, particularly when it came to sexual morality and gay marriage and all that kind of thing, that and remarriage and so on, that a lot of people, some of the cardinals themselves, thought this guy is speaking heresy from a Catholic perspective, and they formally sent him a bunch of questions asking him to clarify whether he was really, is the Pope Catholic?
Is even
It wasn't just an expression anymore. They were actually asking because
well,
they
and
weren't
that
fooled.
seems, as you pointed out in your column, that's a pretty significant question to be asking the
Well, they
Pope.
could have asked him the subsequent question, which is, are you a Christian? And
Yeah.
I would say he was not. He was closest to a deist. He believed God, but didn't really care how you got to God. And he believed anybody who got to God, that was fine, which is, I mean,
Kind of weird
some,
for a Pope.
well, it is weird for a pope. I mean, some of our founding fathers were deists, but
They
not too
weren't
many.
popes.
Yeah, they weren't popes. So it's a
Yeah,
pretty strange.
because he even said when the Charlie Hebdo cartoonists were massacred by Islamic jihadis in January 2015 for the crime of drawing Muhammad, he actually defended the killers. He said, "Look, if you insult my mother, you can expect a punch." And so he didn't say, "Gee, this is monstrous. We shouldn't kill each other over perceived insults to religion or something like that." He was all on the side of killing people for blasphemy. Blasphemy against Islam, mind you.
Right. Yeah, not against. Yeah, not against.
Not against
Well,
Christians.
how does it, no, because I think sometimes in the United States we have a different perspective than the rest of the world when it comes to the Catholic Church. How does this, you know, where I think a lot of American Catholics would be maybe somewhat more okay with some of these more leftist ideas, but other parts of the world not? I mean, how does that, am I right there, number one? And number two, how does that play out?
Yeah, you're very right, absolutely. In Africa, as a matter of fact, the Roman Catholic Church is very conservative, and the African bishops do not buy any of the Pope Francis kind of ideas that we need to modernize the Catholic faith and change with the times and bring it into line with what the Democratic Party is saying. They don't buy any of that. They don't like that. And so some of the people who might become pope who are in the Vatican right now at the conclave are African bishops. Those are the best hope of the traditionalist group. They're hoping that one of these Africans gets picked who will start to move the pendulum back the other way. But the American bishops or the American cardinals that are there, like Dolan and so on from New York, they are all in with the Francis program that we need to change everything to fit the times. And so on. Now, France, of course, the Catholic Church has some things that it has said cannot be changed. And Francis was very careful not to change any of them. But he sowed a lot of confusion about them and made some people think, well, maybe they could be changed after all. And that's the kind of trajectory that the American Church is on in general. In terms of the hierarchy, the young priests, because the leftists, they don't really want to be priests at all. They're not even sure they're men, and they go off and
Yeah.
become
Oh, that's
women.
a whole issue.
But
Yeah.
so the young priests are actually all conservative, and that's going to swing back in the American church as they get older and become bishops, but it hasn't happened yet.
In terms of, does a pope worry at all about, or the new pope membership? I mean, we go, you know, you read about,
Worries about money.
well, yeah, exactly, which is the two are linked. Do they, I mean, it seems to me that you see it just, and this is just my anecdotal observation, there seems to be a rise in some of these much more conservative mega churches, right? And you go there on Sundays, and we've been to some of them, they're packed, and yet you go to a Catholic mass and it's not new. But on the other hand, you know, maybe there's differences there. But does that concern the church at all? And do the, I mean, so I know how do they balance that?
Well, I'm sure it does concern them, but there's a split in the church itself as to what to do about it. And there are some people who, like Francis, would say, we have to speak to the modern world by saying what the modern world says and get with the modern world, which, on the other hand, the other people say, no, we have to have a different voice and offer an alternative to what the modern world is offering, and that will attract people. But because there's this huge disagreement as to what to do about it, there's not really any resolution. Some people think the church has to modernize and give up its old traditions to attract people, and some people say just the opposite.
It's, well, it's kind of like the Republican Party, right? At least here in Colorado. It's like, oh, we have to be the big tent, and so we can't have any principles or talk about anything. And then other people say, well, if you don't have any principles, what's the point? And it's our job to be the principles and to be the foundation and to help provide a moral compass. You'd think that that would matter to a pope. I don't know, call me crazy, but.
Well, it always did before, but this guy was different. And of course, the circumstances of his election are very strange because there was already a pope and he was the first pope to resign in like 400 or 500 years. Nobody really knows why he did so abruptly. And a lot of people wonder darkly if it was some kind of a color revolution that the leftist powers that seem to control so much around the world wanted to put in a leftist pope who would undermine the church's traditional foundations. Well, they certainly got that, whether they maneuvered for it or not.
Well, the Pope who resigned lived for a long time.
Yes, he did. So if he was really in danger of death and very sick because, and so he couldn't serve as pope anymore, well, the time off did wonders because it's like 10 years.
Retirement was there.
You also cite John, I think, 14:6, that where Jesus says, "I am the way, and I'm the only one through." I doubt if Francis believed any of John.
No, well, that's a direct contradiction of what he said. As you know,
And quite frankly, because I grew up in a what it's
he
called.
said, you know, all the religions are paths to God, which is just incoherent on the face of it, because the fact is that, okay, Christianity says that Jesus is the Son of God, and as you noted, John 14:6, I'm the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father but by me. And Islam says that it is an insult to the transcendent majesty of Allah to say that he has a son, and that it's a terrible thing to say that Jesus is divine, that Allah is the Messiah, and so on. And they say that the people who say these things, that Jesus is the Son of God, are under a curse. That's chapter 9, verse 30 of the Quran. So those two things, those two religions might both be false, but they can't both be true,
Well,
because
I grew up in what's called the lower Episcopal Church, which means it's closer to Lutheranism and everything else. And so my religious upbringing, John did not exist. It was a later one that was heretical and awful, and the one they followed was Mark. And Mark didn't even say, Jesus did not say in Mark that he's God. He acknowledges he may be the Messiah when Peter recognizes him and such. But he never says he's God. And then all of a sudden you get all the way to the end and you have John saying, I'm the way and the only one. So it's interesting within Christianity, within the Synoptic Gospels and John, there's a broad panoply to choose from.
Well, that may well be, but the church's tradition in the Catholic, the Orthodox, and the Protestant churches has always been the divinity of Christ. And
Right.
so this is something that's kind of basic Christianity, really. And so for the Pope to say, well, really, it doesn't matter, whatever you want to believe is
Yeah.
okay, that was
Right.
very, very jarring coming from a Catholic, from a
Big
Pope.
tent, though. That's very big tent like,
Huge
right? It's
tent.
you can
This whole world.
What about then the impact on the world? I mean, I think one of the reasons it's getting so much attention is because the left dominated media is, you know, he was a hero to them, and they're hoping that they get another leftist pope, even though none of them even go to church, I don't imagine. But what about the impact on the world? Or is this largely just a Catholic thing, or does it depend on who gets elected or no, becomes pope?
Oh, yeah, it has a tremendous difference depending on who gets elected. But the whole world is watching this because, of course, the Catholic Church is a huge thing.
Yeah.
It's over 2 billion people, the largest religion in the world. And so the Pope has enormous influence over a great deal more than just the Catholic Church. And, you know, in terms of Christianity in general, for example, I'm an Orthodox Christian, and a lot of people don't know much about Orthodox Christianity in the United States, but it's actually the second largest Christian group in the world. And the Ecumenical Patriarch of Constantinople, Bartholomew, was looking forward to meeting Pope Francis in Nicaea, the site of the first Ecumenical Council in the year 325, for the 1700th anniversary of the council. It was actually supposed to be this month, and they were going to agree on a common date for Easter, because right now the Orthodox and the Catholics have a different date for Easter generally on most years. And so that would have been a big step toward reunifying the church, which would have had a tremendous impact on the world at large. And now, of course, Bartholomew is sadly saying, well, it's a shame that he has passed away, and I hope that his successor will want to do this as well, but we'll see.
But well, who knows? Oh, that's interesting. Well,
So are you Greek Orthodox?
yes.
One of the things too I go back to is, and again, this is where having been taught by nuns, it's some of it is interesting to me because again, we were taught, and I didn't buy this at the time, but it, again, this came down from God, so this should be interpreted as God, you know, sort of giving direction. But it doesn't seem like anybody interprets it that way anymore, hardly at all, right? It seems like this is just all these other factors, because then there should be no question about that, right? But they're just these other factors that just interestingly enter in, and it seems like you said before, it's a little bit of both, but it largely seems too, a lot of it has to do with sort of political or whatever the philosophy, not of God, but of the individual papal candidate.
Well, this is the thing that Francis is to a tremendous degree responsible for,
Yeah.
that he sowed a lot of confusion. And where people thought that they knew what the Catholic faith was, after Francis, a lot of people are not so sure, or they think maybe it's changed. And there needs to be, if the Catholic Church is going to recover a sense of being any kind of prophetic voice in the world, a recovery of the idea of there are these things that we're saying that are from God, and then these other things that are human and changeable, and they need to make redraw the distinction or reemphasize the distinction after Francis did a great deal to muddle it.
Right. Well, and yeah, what's the point? Sort of like we've said before, what's the point of being a Republican if you don't really stand for everything and everything's changeable? It's kind of like, what's the point?
Yeah.
Yeah, what's the point of being a Catholic? What's the point of anything
Yeah.
there?
Well, let's kind of change once we got you, because you're always so read and so up to date and so forth. But Donald Trump is a raging bull. I don't think anybody questions that. He's also a bull in a china shop, and once you're a bull in a china shop, some of the porcelain gets kicked over. And Canada, he kicked over some porcelain and managed to ensure that Carney, the liberal one, won the election when it looked like there's no chance the liberals would stay in. And he did the same thing in Australia. Australia was looked like it was going to go to the conservatives, and it went to the liberals who reelected. So sometimes I think Donald, not that he cares, but he can have some strange effects.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not really sure. I know that the leftist media is blaming Trump for what happened in Canada. Of course, they're happy about what happened in Canada, but they're also happy to have something they can blame Trump for and saying, look, what an idiot. He had a chance to get this guy in who would have been simpatico with his point of view. And instead, because of his blundering, now he's got an adversary. And, the thing about that is, though, Canada still has to answer the questions that Trump was raising. And those questions aren't going to go away. The whole thing about the 51st state and all that, where I think really he was needling them, but in
Right.
any case, he said to Trudeau that you have to stop with the drug trafficking over the border, with the criminal migrants coming over the border. And if you don't, we're going to put high tariffs on Canadian goods. And Trudeau said, we can't survive high tariffs. It will destroy our economy. And he said, so you have to have this unfair trade imbalance with the United States, or you can't survive as a nation. You might as well just become the 51st state. And that question is still out there.
Right.
Does Canada have to have money from the US? Have to tariff the US while we can't tariff them in order to survive?
Well,
And
what they
why do we
provide
have to
in
pay
huge
for them?
degree,
You know, why do I, as an American taxpayer, have to
have to
support Canada?
subsidize Canada. Yeah.
Well, they do provide an enormous amount of out of Alberta and other
And Alberta
Western
wants to be
lands.
the
Yeah,
first state now.
that oil and gas and a lot of other ones that we don't tariff anyway. And I, since I follow Canadian elections, I can tell you Donald Trump had a huge effect on it, and Carney would not have won without Trump. Actually, the Conservatives did fairly well. They increased their vote share, and they kept the government to be a minority government. So Carney's going to have a tough time, kind of working everything through. The problem is Carney actually believes Justin Trudeau's policies. Justin Trudeau didn't. He wanted to be hip and cool, and if it was a lefty deal, he'd do it. Carney believes in global warming, and he made a fortune doing it. And he'll be carbon tax plus, and he'll I think he'll destroy the economy of Canada. He'll certainly test it.
Well, yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. And it's still out there that if the Canadians were to gain some control over the northern border and stop allowing themselves to be a conduit for illegal migrants coming into the US and drug traffickers to make use of Canada to get their goods into the US, then things would change. But
Yeah.
Trudeau is not cooperative about that. We'll see if Carney will be.
But
Well,
we got to put a
the
one happy thing is that the Reform Party took all the local council elections in England. And what a shift that has been. All of a
Yeah.
sudden, for the first 100 years, 110 years, it's been a duopoly, and now no longer. And it's going to be a real change.
That's long overdue. The conservatives, they
Yes.
were in power for like 15 years, and they
Right.
repeatedly promised that they would get a hold of the immigration problem and stop the illegal migration, and they didn't. They
No.
repeatedly broke those promises. And
Yeah.
so they deserved everything they had coming.
I
But now
agree.
the liberals, the Labour Party, rather, are destroying, very simply destroying the
That's
country.
right. Yes.
And it's going to be an Islamic state if they don't do something to
Right.
stop the road that it's going on right now.
Let me let Robert, a last question for you before we let you go. I just want you to tell people you've got a new book out,
Yeah.
Anti-Semitism, History and the Myth. Why don't you, real quick, tell us about that and where folks can get
Yeah.
it?
That's a guide to what we've been seeing after October 7th, this explosion and mainstreaming of anti-Semitism. It's an exploration of where it all comes from and what some of the common myths are about it and about the false claims that the Jews are behind this and that and showing why they're false and how we can fight this because we already know where it leads. We saw that in World War II.
All right, Robert, thank you so much for your
I'd
time.
love to have you back to discuss the book itself. I think that'd be interesting.
Yeah, and then after we figure out who the Pope is too. So thank you, sir, for your time. Appreciate it. Have a great
Thank
day.
you. You too.
All right, Robert Spencer, there. Everybody loves you. Everybody's saying thank you. We're going to switch gears, and I don't know who all we have on with us now. I want to talk about this the Unity Party, the Unity Chair, Britta Horn. So we're going to, I think we have Tom Bjorklund, Anna Ferguson, Hope Shoppelman from the prior administration. So if any of you guys are there, feel free to go ahead and turn your cameras on, or if you don't want your camera,
Identify yourself.
at least unmute yourself so we can see that you're here. Okay, there we go. Okay, we've got Tom, Anna, we've got everybody.
Got
I
a
said it's party.
triumvirate. A triumvirate.
It's party Monday. So Britta Horn puts out this, even as I was reading the letters, we're Central Committee members, and I get this email from Britta Horn, and I'm like yelling at my computer as I'm reading this. I'm like, that's not true. That's not true. That's not true. And so she sent this out, again, the Unity doesn't talk about anything she's going to do, just attacking Dave Williams, who is no longer there, by the way. But basically, Tom,
Well,
you.
for those who don't know it, I mean, she got elected and said, okay, I've kneecapped you. I've tried to destroy you. I've spent 2 years trying to do everything I can to prevent Dave from being successful in the Republican Party. But now I'm in charge. You all have to get behind me because we're moving forward. We're not going to be negative and divisive. And what's the first thing she sent out? Negative, divisive, attacking Dave. I mean, it's just an amazing thing.
And Tom, I want to address this to you first because you're their treasurer and you wrote a great response. I mean, this is blatantly false. It's defamatory, complete mischaracterization of what was going on. And I like you in an attempt to gaslight, harm other so division, and distract from her complete and utter failure to launch. So one of the key things she talked about was the fact that, oh, there's this $140,000 discrepancy, clearly giving the
Yeah,
impression
we
that
found.
They found, which is false, and clearly trying to give the impression that something shenanigans were going on with Dave, when actually you are the one who found it, Tom. It went back chairs ago. And so why don't you, so that's sort
And told them about
of, and
it,
you told them about
but they
it.
never would have figured it out.
So why don't you explain, as a former treasurer, what the truth is about that?
Sure. First, I want to make sure this mic is working. You guys hear
You're
me
good.
okay?
Yep,
Good.
you're good. We can hear
We
you.
hear you.
All right. We had a it seemed relatively peaceful meeting. I went in on the 4th of April on Friday, and with a good faith effort to turn over the the books and kind of let them know what we were working on and where we were at, and I let them know that there was a a discrepancy between the cash balances that we had been trying to track down. And the further I got into it, the more it looked like that discrepancy was going to get bigger, not smaller. And so I wondered, it's like pulling a thread and then just having everything unravel. So I was like, the more we got into it, I said, well, we got to go back far enough to find where did that first discrepancy, start. And When we first got the books, and well, we actually never really got any books, to be
From
honest with you.
KBB, yeah.
Yeah, they basically gave us the door code and said, "Here's the code to the door. Good luck." And that was about it for our beginning meeting. But I didn't have a lot to work with. But the first thing I did when I finally got access to the bank accounts, which was a month after we got there. I'm looking at the bank balance, and there was like $8,500 in the main, in the main bank account. And I'm looking at their FEC reports, and it says they've got, $100 and some thousand. And I'm like,
Oh.
wow, this seems to be off a little bit. So I drafted an email to the CPA that filed their campaign finance reports, and I said, hey, the books seem to be off. I've got 100,000. Is that, what's going on? And he responded and said, well, first of all, you don't have all the bank accounts. That's when I found that they were actually hiding bank accounts from us. And so there were, he said, there's three bank accounts that we file from, and it looks like you're only looking at one of them. So I said, okay, like, we need to get access to those. And so when I did, the discrepancy went down a little bit. But I called him on the phone, and he said the discrepancy is really about $95,000. And
So
this is
they
the
knew about it
company.
already too. This is just to clarify too. This is a discrepancy that goes back years, right?
Yeah, he said that as far as he could tell, and of course he had books. They didn't give me any books. So he said it goes back to when I call. And he had been working on the discrepancy, and I didn't really nail down what he meant by working on it, but it appears that they were overstating expenditures and understating donations in order to help bring that into alignment, which is not the right way to go about fixing a problem.
No,
And so
I've tried that with my checking account, and it doesn't work.
Right. So I said, okay, well, and it was interesting that he didn't want to put anything in writing, and he was wanting me to call him on the phone. But he was well aware of it, and he said they've been working on it, and so I thought, well, the more I looked into some of the things they were doing, they were actually, like I said, they were overstating the expenditures, understating some of the donations. And because I had no books, and I think that's why I didn't get books, by the way, because they didn't want to show how much things they had different or whatever. So I described that in the meeting, with Britta, and they introduced me to the new treasurer, guy by the name of Michael Wheeler. And he seemed very capable. And I'd had interactions with him before. He wasn't the most friendly guy in the world, but in the meeting, he was actually very professional. And he seemed competent. He asked intelligent questions, and I thought, okay, this guy, seems to know what he's doing. I didn't feel threatened at all. I felt like I should work with these guys and turn over everything. And then that email comes out. And I'd heard rumblings from people, and they said, oh, Brett is saying this in meetings or, whatever. And so I said, well, I'll give her a little bit of deference. There's been, as a lot of contention between different factions in the party, and there's reality, and then there's politics. So I thought, I'll just kind of let her do her politics thing. I'm not gonna fret too much about it. And then we got this email that came out, and I was just blown away that in our meeting, I told him about the discrepancy. I told him, in fact, I had told her, I said, the discrepancy was, was six figures. And then they said, well, can you give me a solid number? And I said, well, I haven't unraveled it all yet, because for one thing, the right now is kind of the slow part of campaign finance. It's an odd year, and it's early in the year, and so that's the time when you kind of go over, you do your internal audits, and you try to fix everything, make sure you can find anything that's wrong, and you're doing all of that. So I had notified the FEC the first month that we had a discrepancy, and they asked, they said, well, it's a long drawn out process. It'll take some time to fix. And if you can't find everything, but they said, fix everything you can, and then we'll, and they didn't seem to be in a big hurry about it. They said, just, thanks for letting us know, and we'll work on helping you out. So anyway, we were going to do that. And so I let her know, like, hey, this is where we're at. Michael Wheeler said, well, how much is the discrepancy? And I said, well, the problem is the further I go back and I correct some of the errors that are in there, the gap gets bigger, not less. It's going to get worse. And he said, can you put a number on it? And I just kind of off the top of my head said, yeah, like I'd say about $140,000 to $146,000 in errors. And so that's what I just kind of put that out there. And now I was reluctant to just give him a number because I said, well, I don't know really, because we still have to go back. And I didn't, we only went back a couple of years, and I really needs to go back. We need to pull all the bank statements, and I could only have eight years worth of bank statements. So,
And this goes back further than that, we're talking, right?
it does. Yeah.
Well,
And it's really hard.
let me just kind of halt you there because I want to bring kind of Hope and Anna in a little bit and just kind of get their reaction. It's like, and as Tom points out, it's been contentious. We all know that, but they all like, oh, we want a unified move ahead. And maybe start with you, Hope, and then Anna. What was your reaction? You see this email where they're clearly, after Tom was honest with him, was explaining the situation to him, explaining how he'd work with the FEC and everything, and all of a sudden they put out this email clearly implying that you guys were crooks, basically, or that had some sort of defamatory and false
And
information.
moreover, they've indicated that unlike with KBB, they didn't have a smooth transition. And that, you didn't meet with them, you didn't convert to them, you just stiff-armed them. I mean, basically is what they're alleging.
Now, let's
Let
get
you.
your reaction.
Yeah, and thank you guys for having me on. So to what Tom had stated is the moment I saw the email, my eyes were big and I literally was just yelling at the computer and I'm going, "You guys are
Yeah,
lying."
we can hear you along with two of them.
And I'm like, "You guys are lying." And I love how they put "we." Now, maybe that's their way of having unity. But no, that's not their way of unity. They are trying to claim something that we ended up, meaning Tom, ended up actually finding. And so that is the part that is just really sticking in my craw because, when you're honest with people, they will start to come forward and go, "Okay, we can understand. They're a little, they're being transparent." Obviously, in this email, they were not transparent. And my goodness, let me tell you, I have been, yeah, there has been moments in since I saw that email that I am like, look, there definitely is other things behind all of this. They're talking about Dave Williams and Tom Bjorklund's quote salary, but we won't get into all of that and all that stuff. But the whole email was a sham. It was truly fake news. And I like how they're trying to wheel this back. And we'll get into that in a little bit as well as, they're trying to say, "Oh, well, we're going to do an audit." Yeah, that's not the audit that we're looking for.
I
Let me get your,
think
go
that
ahead, Anna.
is not going to be a forensic audit. I think that the email was to cause more chaos and accuse Tom and Dave of double dipping, and even me. They put some stuff in there. I had reimbursements. They put it in consulting fees. And their audit is not going to be a forensic audit. Their audit is going to be a political audit. They just want to do the last couple of years so that they can try and pin something on Dave and Tom. And that's just the continued chaos. They're lying about us. And you know what? I keep asking Heidi Gnall, because she's telling me on one of the Signal groups that, oh yeah, it's going to be quick. We have all the records. We've got the bank statements. It's going to be quick and cheap. And you know what? A forensic audit audit is not going to be quick and cheap. It's not. And then others are saying, well, why can't we just reconcile the numbers, just put the right numbers in? I said, it doesn't work that way with the FEC. You can't just go in and say, hey, oh, gee, you know, here's an extra 140, you know, that's missing. Let's just, you know, make the numbers add up right. I mean, you can't do that. You've got to go back and amend documents. And you can't amend documents if you can't find them.
Right.
Where it actually started. And if we can't find where it started, it's not an easy process. So I'm hoping that they will come up with some good answers in the coming weeks.
Well, let me address the forensic audit issue, because way back when Dave was first elected chair, and you know, we were talking about audits, and I did a lot of research into this at the time. And basically, I think talked to somebody who used to do the books. And what he told me flat out, he said, Julie, it is impossible to do a forensic audit. He said, number one, this is a forensic audit of a political organization. So it takes a lot of very specialized knowledge about campaign finance. And he said, it would cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to do it if you could even find a firm that was willing to do it. And he just said, don't even think about it. He said, the kind of audit you're talking about, it's a kind of thing, like Anna, you said, it's political. It sounds real good. Oh, we're going to do a forensic audit. But he told me at the time, and this guy didn't have a dog in the fight at all. He said, basically, he's like, that's why political parties don't do forensic audits. They can't really. He said, it's just so complicated, and it takes such a specialized accounting knowledge. I mean, Thomas, would you agree with that?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because Michael Wheeler suggested that in our meeting. He said, I mean, Dave actually had lined up an auditor. And so we had an auditor lined up, and it's a company called Watt and Goodwin CPAs out of Colorado Springs. And so we had them lined up to come in and do an audit. Well, Britta doesn't basically dismiss them and decided she doesn't want an actual CPA to come in and do an audit. Instead, she wants the firm that did Jeff Crank's campaign finance reports. And they're doing all of these Americans for Prosperity clients that are, you know, so they looks like they do a lot of Americans for Prosperity stuff. And that's who she wants to do the audit. So I'm sure they're going to come in.
So she wants to hire, let's see if I can get this straight. So she wants to use our Colorado Republican Party money to pay Americans for Prosperity puppets to do work. And then they will then pay to get more candidates elected who will then hire them to do more work for them. I mean, it's just that whole consultant money laundering kind of in and out the revolving door kind of process. Is that what you're sort of describing there with Britta Horn and the AFP people?
Yeah, well, they're a pretty big compliance outfit, and I'm sure they're very capable. They have a lot of financial type people, but they're not forensic auditors. It's a misnomer. They're a political organization. They work for political organizations, and they do, like I said, they actually did the campaign finance for Dave Williams's primary opponent. When I work for clients, I always vet and make sure that I don't work for both sides of the same primary, because, you know, there's a conflict there. And so she basically is intentionally getting a conflicted organization to come in and do an audit, you know, their type of audit. And I don't even know that I would call it an audit, but, you know, they're going to compare to campaign finance or whatever. But she specifically said on a Mandy Connell show, I heard her say that she's only going to go back 2 years. So
that's no, interesting. Anna, why are you laughing? I mean, that doesn't even begin to get to the issue, right?
Oh, no, Julie, it's a joke. It's on a fishing expedition. They want to just implicate Tom and Dave. They want to make it look like they're doing something wrong. And then, you know, as the weeks go on, people are even going to forget. You know, do you have the results of the audit? But they're never going to forget that he accused Tom and Dave. And that's always going to be in everybody's head, was that Tom and Dave did something wrong. You know, and it's a joke. It's a joke. 2 years to go back and do a forensic audit. I mean, it's just ridiculous. You know, you don't find nothing.
And Hope, let me ask you this, because you kind of imply that you think there's something more afoot. It's like, so this is the unity party, right? Let's move forward. It's like, well, Dave is gone. Tommy's gone. Actually, their new treasurer is gone too. But
Well, it's a good point. Mr. Wheeler is bright enough and capable enough.
So he'd be
and once he found out what the job would entail, he got out of there as fast as he could. Threw the checkbook back and I'm out of here.
And you know what really surprises me is that Russ Andrews wants to have his name as the treasurer. He's going to be responsible, but he's not doing any of the reporting. Why would you put your name on something that you're not in charge of? So, I mean, that's a big mistake on his part as well, I think. Just
well,
like
what Anna. Do you think is behind this?
I'm sorry?
Well, I was asking Hope what she thinks. She had started to talk earlier that she thinks there's more than meets the eye to all of this.
Oh, absolutely. This is an old, this is an establishment rhino company. They are the ones who are going to be putting forward some quote political audit. It is to just go deep and dive and try to find something wrong with what Tom and Dave did. All of us, right? They're going to pin it on all of us. But I wanted to add another candidate to that actual company, Jeff Hurd. Actually ended up actually having them as their FEC filing company. So it's all AFP. Again, I'm already digging into AFP. Tom and I actually did some amazing research and we will announce that later on. Good. But AFP is definitely involved in all of this.
Right.
This
well,
is quite disgusting.
And the main reason, correct me if you disagree, but they want to go after you guys and Tom and Dave, I think is more than just personal against Tom and Dave. They want to do everything they can to discredit any kind of grassroots movement. Was that
Oh, absolutely.
Fair?
Yes, absolutely. Even the chair, the vice chairman on March 1st ended up endorsing Jeff Hurd. And then he said, basically, this is in my own independent whatever.
Oh, yeah, this we're not going to endorse anybody candidate, right? Who's then right. What does he do less than a month afterwards he endorses somebody? So,
so yes, it is, you know, rules for thee, not for anybody else. They are the king and queen of all of these things. And they are going to have, you know, they're going to live it up. They're not going to do anything. They're going to have consultants do every single part of this. And we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, let me, too. I mean, we were listening.
Well, they're going to find out, unlike the hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars they provide the congressional candidate, there ain't going to be a lot to pay them. And so if they're used to kind of, you know, doing work for well-funded campaigns, they're going to get a bit of a shock.
Absolutely.
Well, and Tom, you know, one of the things I think too, and we've got a few more minutes here, and I was shouting at the radio, Chuck was listening to Peter Boyle's had Steve Reams and Dick Wadhams on, who then just, and one of the things that was so annoying to me, and that's why I wanted to have you guys on is, I mean, I like Peter, but he's going to probably attack me for saying that he clearly didn't even know what he was talking about. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you hear in some of the other media, people are talking about this and they're just letting them go out there. And why? And I mean, the media is complicit. I mean, the Anschutz industrial media complex is complicit in this. And letting
well, Tom, you're going to go on the Dan Caplis show being substituted by Sheriff Reams, right, today?
Yeah, they've asked me to come on, and I thought about it, and I said, well, yeah, I'll go ahead and go on. I don't know what his agenda is, but it's interesting to me that Peter Boyles didn't even reach out to anybody at all except for one side, and he had no interest in really getting, you know, a two-sided story. So,
yeah. Well, I guess somebody reached out to Peter.
What time are you going on?
5:30 today.
Okay. Well, I'll be listening for that one.
For what it's worth, Steve Reams did say in the Peter Boyle thing that, that he wasn't really sure why Britta was doing this. He said,
"We ought to move on."
That they were about unity. This isn't very unifying.
This is not exactly moving forward.
Well, that's the funny thing. You
go
know,
ahead.
Michael. Oh,
go ahead.
Well, Michael, when he suggested, he said, "We, you know, what we really need is a forensic audit, and we really need to go back in time." And he also said, "You know, because he asked about the different kinds of audits," and I said, "I think the auditor, you know, the CPA firm was going to look at a transactional audit and then just, you know, make sure that it complied with what we reported." And then he said, "Well, I'd like to do a forensic audit." And he said, you know, and he told them right up front, he said a forensic audit is going to cost $100,000. And
At least,
so I
minimum.
kind of think that's, I suspect that's why he left, because they probably, you know, I mean, I'm only speculating because I have no idea, but it seems to me that he was really wanting to do an honest attempt at finding out where that discrepancy came from. And you know, I think the other side just said, no, let's just focus on Dave and Tom, and you know, if we find an error or something, we'll blow it up into something huge and try to
Right. Yeah.
point fingers and, you know, assign blame, rather than, you know, let's get a disinterested third party, somebody who's a pro, who knows how to look for this kind of stuff. And I'm all in favor of a real forensic audit, if it can even be done, you know, because without books, it's really hard to audit something. But a forensic analyst can actually find a lot of things, you know, and their ability to look at bank statements and public statements and things like that and pull it together is actually pretty amazing. So I think, you know, I'd love to see that, because you know, that's a skill set I don't have to, you know, to do that. I'm not a CPA, so but a forensic auditor is, you know, is a step above, and I would be fully in favor of that, and I'd like to see that happen, because it's always been kind of a mystery is how far back did this thing go, you know,
And where did
and
it go?
where did
Well,
it
Ryan
start?
Paul. So
Well,
let me.
I've been on various boards and contentious boards, and occasionally they'll say, let's do a forensic audit, and then they find out, and not $100,000. The ones I've been in, it's like $250,000, and they go,
Need a forensic audit.
whoa, I forget that. It sounds nice until you find out what it would
Not
really take.
because we got to get going. So let me just give both Hope and Anna just sort of an opportunity just for final thoughts on this.
So I'm just going to go ahead. I need to correct myself. It was actually May 1st that Daralee
Right.
Phelan actually, so not March 1st, I'm sorry. But I agree. I'm in 100% agreement that I would like a forensic audit. I think it needs to happen, and we need to find where that money leads. And who, where did it go, right? And the big thing is they're not doing a forensic audit, and that's what the SCC members need to know. This is a political audit. If they're only going to go 2 years in, then it is a gotcha between all of us and for the grassroots, leadership. So I'm just going to leave it at that. Anna?
Okay.
Yeah, I totally agree. And if they only go back 2 years, I don't think that there's one thing that they're going to find that Tom has done that was unethical or you know, on purpose to deceive anybody. I don't think I've ever met a man as dedicated to his job and honest as Tom Bjorklund. So I challenge them to find one thing that he did that was
Well,
not.
the nice thing about politics is it doesn't have to be true.
Yes, we already know.
You're not
100% true.
constrained by truth.
So we'll stay in touch so we can set the record straight. So Hope Shoppelman, Anna Ferguson, Tom Bjorklund, thank you guys so
Thanks,
much for your
guys.
time.
And we
Thank
look
you.
forward to listen to you at 5:30 on I guess it's 6:30. Yeah.
Yeah, and thank
AM.
you for continuing to fight. Who
Yeah,
knew?
well.
There you go. Thanks,
Yeah.
guys. We'll see you next time. Thank
Thanks,
you.
guys.
By the way, just to let
Thank
you
you.
know.
Okay. All right. And thank. And that's going to wrap it up for
That's
us.
going to wrap it up, Julie.
Bit of a busy show today. Thank you to everybody there on Zoom. Real quick on Wednesday, we're going to have Trent Lisey. Chuck has discovered some weird Trent Lisey, Laura Loomer, Lauren Boebert
Now, we're
connections.
going to have a whole section on Lauren Loomer. If you don't know her already, you will find out, and we'll meet somebody who had been loomered.
That's right.
So it'll be a lot
Unfairly.
of fun.
And then Mark Camden too. That'll do it for us. We'll see everybody on Wednesday.